So, now, any questions about what I said there? And hopefully, from upstairs, are you still up there? Can you bang on the floor upstairs? Yeah, still up there. Great. Marvellous. In the upper realms. Any questions from the upper realms, please write them on a piece of paper, send them down, and you get priority because you are higher beings. But while we're waiting for the profound question from the heavenly beings up in the reading room, are there any questions from you lower beings? Questions on virtue and good karma. I know just somebody was asking me about this just beforehand, about the karma. Karma is not fate. So don't think, oh, I'm sick, I've got cancer, I'm going to die, it must be my karma. No one knows what the karma is. Like some people have told me, oh, it's not my karma to be a monk. So how do you know? Have you tried it yet? I said, give it a try, then you might find out. But karma is one of those things which the Buddha said, only the Buddhas can truly and fully understand the law of karma. No other monk, not even the most enlightened monks, can understand it. Because it's just so complex. It's such a web of cause and effect. So I always give it the benefit of the doubt. It doesn't matter what you experience. If you've got a cancer, you know, if you've sort of lost your job, if you can't find a partner, or you haven't had a baby yet and you really want a baby, don't say, oh, it's my karma that I can never have a kid. You can never know that. All you know is you haven't had a kid yet. If you haven't sort of found a partner yet and you want one, you haven't found one yet. If you're having difficulty in your marriage, you haven't found peace yet. If you're not enlightened, don't think, oh, I can't get enlightened, it's not my karma. You haven't got enlightened yet. So that means you're keeping the opportunity open for anything to happen. And that's the great thing about karma. You can turn anything around. You are in complete control of your destiny if you put the effort into the now. You can change things around. So the most important thing about the law of karma is not what's happened to you. It's not what you're having to deal with. The law of karma is saying, what are you doing with what you've got? That is the law of karma. And you can always do something with what you've got. The old simile which I said here last time I was here. And if you're going home and you tread in the dog poo, the dog shit, let's just use the vernacular. If you tread in dog shit, and as I said in Singapore, anyone who says, monks should not say shit, look what the Buddha said. The Buddha said twice in the Vinaya and also in the Aranavibhanga Sutta, he said, monks, you should teach the Dhamma in the local language. That's what the Buddha said, so that I defend myself by what the Buddha said. So, you see it on TV, you say it to each other at home. So, you go home, and as you're going home, you tread in the dog shit. It goes all over your shoes. If you're a wise Buddhist, you never scrape the dog poo off your shoes. You always take it home with you. Because in a back garden, or even next door's garden, or public park, there'll be mango tree. So dig it under the mango tree. Save it. And 1 year later, those mangoes will be sweeter than ever. And when you eat that mango, the thing you should always remember is what you're really eating. It's dog shit, but transformed into the most sweet, delicious, juicy mango. And I use that simile to say, it's what you do with what you've got. Even the most smelly, repulsive thing can be turned into the most juicy, delicious fruits. That's what karma is. So it doesn't matter what you have to deal with in life, a cancer, sort of your partner messing around in the marriage, so if you lost a loved one, you lost your job, when things go wrong in life, when you're covered with dog shit, it's always fertilizer for the mango tree. Fertilizer for life. Law of karma means dig it in, transform it into compassion, wisdom and peace. You can do that. That's the law of karma. It's not what you have. It's what you're doing with it. Anyway, what would be your advice to someone who intends to renounce the world? I would say, Nike, just do it. How many doctors have we got in Malaysia? How many nurses? How many businessmen? How many police? What profession is really lacking? No, that's only half the profession. Nuns as well. And as I said the other day, the advice, I mentioned this to the chief priest, the late Dr. Kesavi Dharmananda, and he thought it was very funny, and he repeated it. In Malaysia, everybody is so happy when someone becomes a monk. You want to queue up to offer them robes. You're so delighted when someone becomes a monk, as long as it's not your son. Not my son, but someone else's son. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. You want to offer robes and all sorts of things. But please, remember, it has to be somebody's son. And if that's your son, or your daughter wants to renounce, you have immense, wonderful karma to actually to give a son or a daughter to the sasana. Not all monks and nuns become good teachers or become inspirations. If maybe only 10% or even 1% does, that's so wonderful. Because one monk, one nun can do so much good work for our society. Much more so than any doctor. So if anyone really wants to, oh please, we really need more monks and nuns in Malaysia. And I'm lazy too. I don't want to always be coming to teach. Now you're supposed to get your own indigenous locals in instead of importing them from overseas. Now it's hard enough, you know, sort of teaching and getting things going in Australia. But of course, I'm very happy to come. But it would be wonderful. My dream for Malaysia is to be so many monks and nuns in this country that when I come, I'm not really needed. There'll be so many monks and nuns teaching and looking after you all. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And of course, it gets very inspiring that it's your own homegrown product rather than some import. So great, just do it. I'm sorry this question might be out of topic, I don't care. Do you think using martial arts is in line with Buddhism? Aha, as long as you don't hit me. Well, actually, it happened once, you know. I was visiting my mother over in London, and I was walking, because I like exercise, from her apartment to the London Buddhist Vihara, which is the Sri Lankan temple. It was about maybe 3 or 4 kilometres, about an hour's walk. So it was a nice walk. So I was giving a talk there. I said, look, I'll walk there. You know, forget about getting lifts in cars. So I was walking, but I was walking past one of these very rough housing estates. It was late in the afternoon, early evening, and there was a gang of boys were waiting outside. And there's no way past them, so I had to walk right through them. And as they saw me, you know, these could be violent kids. They're going, Buddha, 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 Buddha. So as I went past them, I made like martial arts posture. And they all went away, because they didn't know. It worked. So if martial arts is done as what most people actually tell me, it's like a sort of a physical and mental training. So a mental discipline. Then that's obviously very useful. And I think most people who have done martial arts, they tell me that, you know, really, the best martial arts people never need to hurt anybody. No one, I think he's been here. Remember Ajahn Karuniko? Has he been here before? He's the second monk at Chithurst Monastery. I'm sure he's actually been through Kuala Lumpur. Tall English monk. He's such a soft... Karuniko means like compassion. And no, he really is one of the most compassionate, softest monks I've ever known. He was, I think, second dan in karate, black belt. And sometimes you never believe that such a kind, compassionate person could be such a skilled martial artist. But I don't know if he told you his story, why he became a monk. He said he was second dan fighting another second dan black belt. He was a girl. And there was obviously, this is really tough sort of martial arts in a competition. And he said something strange happened. He got into a state of peace. He put all his defenses aside and let this second dan black belt just hit him wherever she wanted. He said nothing hurt. Could feel no injury. He said it was a weird state of samadhi where he was completely invulnerable. She could do whatever she wanted, no bruising, no breaks, no pain. It was such a weird, unexpected state of mind he got into that he realized there's more to martial arts than just force. The power of the mind was immense. And through some strange samadhi meditation state while he was competing, he said no one could hurt him. He became invulnerable. I'm not sure in the martial arts manuals whether that's recorded, but I'm sure it probably is, as some high state where your mental and physical training get to such a level, you can open your body up to a second dan black belt and be completely safe. And that started getting interested in the power of the mind, so he became a monk. As a student, I feel that I live a very fast-paced life. Every time I finish a task, I rush to complete the next task, and it goes on and on. I feel the need to slow down, but don't know how to. Please advise. The next session, the busy person's method of easy meditation is for you. But I will give you a taste, because being busy, I said this at a business conference, my definition of busyness is not having many things to do, but doing too many things at the same time. That's a busy person who does too many things at the same time. Basically, they become inefficient. I say this because I've seen many people, they do a lot. Their productivity is huge. They never seem to be working hard. They're never stressed out, but they get so much done. Other people rush around, backwards and forwards, and at the end of the day, you look about what they've achieved, and it's very small. The busy people do not get much done. Doing too many things at the same time, you don't get anything done properly. You're inefficient. So when we talk about productivity, which is the word which is important here, if you're really going to be productive, you have to rest from time to time. When you rest from time to time, your brain recharges and you do become more efficient. You get more done with less rushing around. I am a very productive monk. I go many places, got many responsibilities, but I don't stress out. It's an example of how to be productive, but with no busyness. And that's coming next. The Ajahn Brahm, formerly known as Peter Betts. Yeah, my mother still calls me that. Could you, because I say, of all the people, I did change my name by the proper way, not to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, but to Brahma Wangsa. But my mother still insists on calling me Peter. And I say that she's got the right to do that. No one else. Could you please elaborate more on your earlier answer to your question, to be good is different from to do good? Oh, that's an interesting. Did I say that? But anyway, to be good is different than to do good. Okay, to be good and doing good, sometimes that we have a phrase now, the do-gooders, which is a lot of time that it's, I think, actually in the act of doing good, rather than just, well, I think maybe let's rephrase that. When I went to that conference over in UK last April, it's a human resources conference. I sat in at a few other people's presentations, and one thing which was so Buddhist, I almost said sadhu. They were saying that in modern business, that too many businesses, they worry about just the outcomes rather than the process. As long as they get some profits, or as long as the contract gets signed, or as long as the figures go up, they will give you an increase in salary, maybe a promotion. But they found the expense of that outcome is that many people who were in that project got so burnt out, they left, they said, I can't stand this place any longer. You got stressed out, you got cancer, sure you got the contract signed, but what cost? And they said that in modern business terms, it's the process is more important than the outcome. The person who said this was the HR manager of DEFRA, which is the Department of, was it Energy, Farming and Regional Affairs over in the British government. And she said that she managed to talk the minister eventually into promoting and rewarding the people in that organisation who kept the process going well, rather than got the contracts or the memorandum of understanding signed in Brussels and the European Union. So too many people were getting promoted just because they got things done, but the expense of so many people. Now, that department has changed. If you get the job done, but many people leave as a result, you do not get a reward. But if you don't get the contract signed, but people really tried hard, they were motivated, and you got your resources there for the next negotiations, if the process is good, promoted. That's the difference between doing good and being good, not the outcomes. Like the same, like my, for example, my monastery. It's not whether we build it, but it's how it's built which is important. My meditation retreat center. It's not just the buildings, it's how the buildings come together, how people get inspired. It's the method, it's more important than the results. So, sure, you know, we could sort of get that retreat center done, but in the wrong way, and get this beautiful building, really expensive, but by exploiting or cheating others, that's no way to go. Sure, the outcome might be impressive, but the process was terrible all the way along. Same with the BGF. You're successful by just how many people like coming here, like serving on your committees, because the process is Buddhist, not the outcome. Even if you can't pay your debts and the whole thing falls apart, if you've done it in the best Buddhist way, then you're successful. The people are important, not the buildings, not the place. We're Buddhist first. That's why I tell my Buddhist society, we're Buddhist first. No, come on, Buddhists. Let's forgive each other. Let's be kind to each other. Good example of that. A few years ago, somebody gave a donation of, I think, $3,000 to our nuns' monastery. We got a letter from them. They were in Bangkok. They'd lost their money. Can they have their $3,000 back? And now, I have to serve on the committee as a spiritual advisor, but I wanted to find out, after all these years of teaching, what my committee was like. So the president read out that letter. We got this request, somebody who gave $3,000, and they want it back again, because they're penniless. And he said, according to our constitution, according to the law, we just can't do this. But, poor person needs the money. What do we think? And all my committee members, one after the other, said, well, you can see the dilemma, but isn't compassion why we're here in the first place? So our treasurer wrote $3,000 and sent it to them in Bangkok. I was so proud of my committee. After all those years, the person was more important than any money. That's what we're there for. To serve, be compassionate, be kind, be good. That's being good. Doing good is saying, no, we need your $3,000 because we need to build a monastery. So I think that's what I really mean. So process is more important, not the end result. You get a big, the most fabulous Buddhist society in the whole of Malaysia. Big, beautiful buildings, but at what cost? What people cost? So be good. Don't just do good. Okay. Since you have been a teacher in school, can you share a tip on how I can encourage my children aged 10 and 7 to keep the precepts? Sadhu. Teach your children to be honest and to question. That was the piece of advice which somebody gave an English couple who were Buddhists but didn't want to indoctrinate their children. If you encourage your children to question, they say, why keep precepts? You should give them a good answer for peace, for happiness. Why do you want to sort of steal? I remember a school group came many years ago to Perth, and I had to teach some Buddhism, and I just said, you know, what really hurts? What hurts you? Give me like a few things which hurts. They say like killing and punching and stealing and lying. So straight away you've got three precepts. And these were just kids who weren't Buddhists, who were Christians, maybe about 11 or 12. Now what hurts? Kids are smart enough to know these things hurt. Maybe they may not know that alcohol hurts. But I remember going to, it was the a blessing of the manager of Thai Airways in Perth. He wanted to do a blessing, so I went there and I was trying to teach his kid. I said, have you ever seen anybody drunk? And he turned around and said, yeah, my dad. Great that way, really embarrassed the father. But you know, the father could do nothing because it was true. And then the kid realized, because he'd seen someone who was drunk, you know, that alcohol was bad. So if you want to teach your kid about what happens when people get drunk, what alcohol does, ask them, have you ever seen anyone who's drunk? Or even get a movie or something about someone who's drunk and show it to them. Is that what you want to be? Stupid like that? So that's how we can teach kids. To understand the precepts is like doing bad things, things which hurt. You don't want to be hurt. What hurts? Don't hurt yourself, don't hurt others. And that's how you can encourage kids to keep precepts, by not hurting each other. All along I am quite a lazy person and felt quite guilty about it, but after hearing your talk this morning, I feel very happy and relieved. Thank you, Ajahn. On the board upstairs, I don't know who wrote that down, but I corrected it this morning. Somebody wrote down that it was the happy yana, Ajahn Brahm meditation, and they said, success comes before happiness. You got it the wrong way round. It's success comes after happiness. That was the result of a big experiment done in the United States, many universities. If you're happy, then you become successful. So if you feel guilty, or you work too hard, and so you feel grumpy, you haven't got any happiness in life, you will never be successful. You be happy first. Be kind to yourself, be compassionate, give yourself some break. From that happiness, you have all the success you ever wanted. As a monk, I was happy first. Success came afterwards. So happiness comes first. If you want to be successful in life, create happiness in your life. Take it easy, don't feel angry and guilty, and then you'll become successful. How to deal with a person who is not virtuous? Run away, associate with other people. There's always part of everybody who has some virtue. Even Adolf Hitler was a vegetarian. So everybody has some virtue in them. So if you're dealing with a person who is not virtuous, focus on that part of that person which you respect, which you like, which you value. And you will find that is the part which grows in them. That's what I did. I said, I think the other night, when I went to prisons for many years teaching inmates, I would focus on that part of the rapist which was soft and forgiving and kind and gentle. I could always find that. Even some of the worst people. Now, one of the most famous criminals I ever saw was a very famous English criminal, Ronnie Cray. Now, the Cray brothers, these were East End gangsters who, like in England, were just notorious for how mean and nasty and violent they were. I remember just visiting England, going to Broadmoor Prison for the psychiatric insane criminals, and meeting Ronnie Cray. And he said, whenever I get a few quid, I'll send some to your monastery. He wanted to make dana, even though he was a notorious, violent man. I could see something good and kind in those people. If you see something virtuous in the meanest and nastiest of people, they will see it in themselves. And that is the path to healing. Seeing the beautiful is like seeing the flower in the mess of weeds. So you don't need to destroy it anymore. You'd cultivate the flower. You neglect the weeds until the flowers take over your garden. Water flowers, never water weeds. Pay attention to goodness that grows in you and it grows in the person you're with. If you're in a partnership, a marriage, a relationship, if you're always focused on the faults of your partner, there you go again, you stupid husband. You talk too much, wife. You never listen. Stop focusing on the negative in your relationship. You focus on, you know, of course they do talk too much. Of course, you know, he does come home late. But I thank you so much for working so hard. Thank you for being kind. If you accentuate the positive, that which grows more and more and more, the negative just withers and dies for lack of attention. Last question. Is social gambling during festive season considering breaking one of the five precepts? How many people played mahjong? Okay. Did you win? Now, festive gambling. You've got to be careful with gambling. It's actually not breaking the precepts, gambling. But the Buddha called it like a danger. So be careful. Because sometimes, you know what happens? People go gambling and they get addicted to it and it goes too far. That's why the monks, you know, we're not allowed to gamble, but I don't know if you know this story. This is of one of the famous nuns, Ayakema. Have you heard of Ayakema before? I don't know if you know this story, but she was teaching a retreat in England many years ago. And after finishing the retreat, her attendant, who I know very well from Australia, Anya Takta her name is, her attendant was driving her from the retreat centre to Heathrow Airport to take a plane, I think back to Germany rather than Australia. And on the way they had to stop for lunch, you know, before midday, which reminds me I've got to stop soon. So in England, the usual the place they have for restaurants for lunch, they usually have little restaurants next to the pubs. So have a section off, you know, where they have the restaurant and it's next to the bar. And of course, you know, the nuns, monks can't go into the bars, but, you know, the restaurant's fine. So they went into the restaurant, and they had a nice lunch. And on the way out, I think Ayakema was just finishing off or going to the toilet, and the attendant walked out, and it's one of these slot machines, you know, where you pull the bar, and all these things turn around, you know, to try and get the jackpot. And the reason this Buddhist attendant was putting the coins in the slot because they had change, they were going overseas, it was just a way of getting rid of the change. You know, never expecting to win anything, just, you know, had a few coins left, let's put them in the machine. But of course she was pulling it and nothing was happening. The chances of winning one of those machines is, you know, zero just about. But then she put a coin in and she was about to pull the lever when Ayakema came out. And straight away, I got this from Anya's own mouth, she said to Ayakema, "Now you're a Buddhist nun, you've got the good karma, you pull it." And Ayakema, in a moment of heedlessness, she wasn't mindful, she said, "Okay," and she pulled the lever. Round it went, and money started pouring out. She got the jackpot. And this is careful being monks because, you know, you have got good karma. The only time she did this and the jackpot came out, but there was karmic consequences about to come next. Because all this money started pouring out of the machine. And everyone in the pub went quiet. Because they saw this nun had won the jackpot. And then the barman behind the bar got a bell and tinkled it. What does that mean? He said, according to our tradition, anyone who wins a jackpot has to buy a drink for everybody in the bar. So a Buddhist nun had to buy alcohol for every person in this pub. And that's a true story. So don't do that. Don't come to me and say, "Can you pull this machine? Can you give me some numbers? You get me into big trouble." But if it's just a bit of fun and games, and it really is just for, you know, family custom, and you don't go gambling afterwards, no problem at all. most people in Penang said once a year, this old couple, they just go to Genting just for a day. They take a certain amount of money, and they know they're going to lose it, and they just go there and just spend it, have an afternoon, day together, and they go back again. So it's basically, they're not really gambling because they don't expect to win anything. They're just entertaining. But if you expect to win and you want to win and you have to win, that's what I call the dangerous gambling. So if you get a certain amount of money, maybe 100 ringgit or I don't know, 200 ringgit, and you say, this is just a bit of entertainment, I'm going to lose this. Once I've lost it, fine, go out. Then that's not so much a problem. And so you have to lose it. So if you do win, at the end of the day, give it to Temple. So you just come out with nothing. 200 is what you're going to spend. Anything extra goes to Temple, to charity or something. And that way it's not real gambling. You don't get anything out of it. Okay, so thank you for those questions. A lazy person's guide to making good karma. And coming after lunch is a busy person's method of easy meditation. So those of you who are busy, who have lots to do, who haven't got much time, the next session is for you. If you are busy, this is how to do meditation easily. No stress. So that's coming next. So thank you for listening so far. Do you want to do three sadhus? Sadhu. Okay, try again. Whenever you do sadhus, it's got to be with 100%, with all of your heart and all of your mouth. So once again, sadhu. Sadhu. Doesn't that make you feel happier? It does. It makes me feel happy. So whenever you do sadhus, just give it really everything you've got. Much more fun.